I'm standing up.
All right, I'd like to welcome you all back. All right. It's my pleasure and honor to introduce tonight's speaker, Dave. My name's David. I'm an addict. Oh, my God. I have 1,391 days clean today. And yes, I do keep track of that. That's my way of my just for today. This is where I took my first newcomer chip, right here in this room, over 3.5 years ago. So this is a very spiritual place for me. A little bit about my experience. I have 35 years of active addiction behind me. I started smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol at the age of 9. My parents owned bars and restaurants when I was growing up, so it was very easy for me to obtain alcohol. I basically stole it and walked out the back door, and my little friends would meet me in the back, and we'd get drunk and smoke pot. That progressed. I went in the Navy in about 1976. It was a great time of my life, but I still used. I was a submariner for 4 years, and I still used the whole time I was in the Navy, on board ship, off ship, recreationally, wherever I went, we were always high. That progressed on. You know, there's a saying that says, I don't know if I was born an addict, but the day I picked up, an addict was born. And I believe that 100%, because it seems like now that I've worked my steps 3 times, I'm starting to understand it more and more. And I'm also, I mean, I go to school at CSUB for the KDAC program, and I'm starting to understand my addiction a little bit more each time, each quarter that I go to the classes. But my addiction took me to places that I never thought I'd ever go. I beat people. I did some horrible things to people. I've taken a person's life, you know, and I pay for that now with post-traumatic stress. My first arrest was in Tucson, Arizona, and it was involving sales of cocaine. And during the 80s, that was the thing to do. Everybody sold coke or did it, you know. And that led me, luckily there was crooked people in the justice system, and I got to move to California. But I always knew I had a problem. I just really never wanted to quit. My problem was me. I just didn't want to quit. I mean, I knew that every time I say this a lot, every time that I got high, I broke out in handcuffs. And I did. Now that I look back on it, every time I got high, I broke out in handcuffs. I was always going to Laredo, or I was in Tucson County Jail, or Phoenix County Jail, Maricopa County Jail, all over, you know. And I've been in, God, I don't know, 20 county jails over my period of 35 years. And, you know, we've all been there. We all know the chaos that you go through about the drugs, you know. Finally, I was living in Los Angeles. I had another girlfriend at the time, and it was during the riots in Los Angeles that we decided to move to Bakersfield. And at that time, basically the only thing I was doing was smoking marijuana. I mean, I was still an addict, but I was smoking marijuana. I wasn't doing any hard drugs at all at that time. Moved to Bakersfield and found crystal methamphetamine. And I thought I was just on cloud 9, because I could, you know, I could work 20 hours a day and try to sleep for 4, and then get up and work for 20 hours a day. And I was, I worked on most all the radio stations here in Bakersfield. I was Dave Scott on the KGFM, and I worked at KXHA for a while. I worked at Kathy Radio. I used to drive around that little white car with a big sombrero. You guys remember that? I was so embarrassed in that car. My God, couldn't believe I actually drove that. But I used the whole time too. I mean, that's where my addiction really took off at. Is because I mean, I was working 20-hour days, and I needed that little, remember that expression, pick-me-up. I needed that pick-me-up every day, and it started, every day it got a little worse, and I started doing a little bit more and a little bit more, and, you know, I remember first when I first started working for this radio station, I was doing like little quarter grams, and later on in the my addiction, I was, you know, buying quarter pounds and, you know, doing the peeking out the blind thing and just doing some really horrible things. I collected money for some people in Bakersfield, and I sold drugs in Bakersfield, and life got really horrible. And speed up a little bit, I got a nudge from the judge in 2000 or 1999-2000. I was got busted at my home. The SWAT team raided my house, and I had a friend that was reported missing. This lady that we were really good friends, and she used to get an Indian check every month from a casino down in Los Angeles. And she'd call me up and offer me money to go gambling, and she'd give me, you know, what would you do if somebody said, hey, I got I'll give you $1,000 to go gambling. What would you do? You know, I took off with her and we'd go gambling. So we went all over the state of California, but I had found out that she had been reported missing, and nobody had seen her for about 3 months, and we didn't think anything about it because she had a MO of doing this over and over again. But next thing I know, my house is being raided, and I'm being accused of murdering this lady. And I was on the front page of the Bakersfield, California, and I was accused of murdering this woman. And this was like a big shock to me because, you know, I did some really bad things, but, you know, like I did say, I did take one man's life, but it was in self-defense, and it had to happen. But with murdering murdering somebody, that's something I can never do. Even in my morals have never went that bad. So what happened is that basically after the house got raided, they found a little bag of methamphetamine, and I got thrown in jail. And I had to do, I was sentenced to a year in Laredo, but I only did 6 months, which was a eye-opening experience. You know, and you know how you guys are when you get into jail. You basically, you know, dear God, I can't do this anymore. Please get me out of this. I'll never do it again. As soon as I was released, I was at my Connect stop and started all over again. And I was sentenced to felony probation, and I kept giving dirty tests and dirty tests and dirty tests. And finally, I was sentenced to Prop 36. And right before this, in March, just last month, in 2003, my mom died of lung cancer. And she died in my arms, and her last words were, David, would you please get clean? And I didn't know my mom even knew I was getting high. I mean, that's how out there I was. I was so far gone that I know my dad had a little feeling that something was going on because I would never come in the house. I actually built a workshop in the back of my house just to do drugs in. It's the only thing it's there for is to do drugs and tweak in. And I have this, well, I'll get to that. She died in my arms, and what did I do that night? I went out and bought an ounce of dope and got high for another 3 months. On June 31st, 2003, probation showed up at my house and took me away. And they threw me in jail overnight. And this had happened, I was arrested like 6 straight months in a row every month. Same problems, just giving dirty tests for Prop 36. I could never give a clean test, no matter what. And so about June 31st, I was in the Central Receiving Facility downtown jail. We've all probably been there. In that cold, cold room. Freezing to death. I only had like little shorts on, and they let me put on my house shoes, and I had a tank top on. Freezing to death. That's God telling me I'm busy right now. But I was at my wit's end, and I knew that I knew this was the time for me to stop punishing myself and punishing my family, because that's the people that we always forget about, the victims that we do have, and our family is a victim of our addiction. And my dad bailed me out of jail for the last time. This is when I really knew. I mean, I was in jail, and I remember praying to God, saying, I can't do this anymore. This is killing me. I see where my life's going. I've been shot 8 times. I've been stabbed 6. You know, this is over the whole 35 years. I've been beat up numerous times. I beat up other people numerous times. And I just saw my life going to hell. I mean, literally going down the toilet. And I remember I called my dad, and my dad picked me up about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I told him, basically, I said, you know, I'll be walking North Chester. Just look for me. You know how when you get out of jail, you just got that walk going. All you think you're doing is walking looking for cigarettes on the ground because you want a cigarette, you know. That's the way I was going. And finally my dad saw me, honked at me, and picked me up. And my dad never cried. My dad, you know, my dad's from old school. He never let out his feelings. He never told us really how he felt about anything. And my dad pulled the car, his truck over and started crying and said, Dave, we can't do this anymore. And he says, you're killing me. And that just made a really big impact on me because my dad had never done that. I love my dad and love my mother to death, but they never did that to me. And I don't know, something right then happened, and my clean date's July 2nd, 2003. So I give myself 2 days of coming down from everything I had done. And once I went to court, you know, you get in that Prop 36 thing, and there's a little lapse in time. You go to court and everything, and it was I was clean for 90 days before I was sentenced to a treatment facility right down the street that I'm very proud to say was Kenmore Center. And so I was clean for 90 days before I got into Kenmore Center by the skin of my teeth, literally. I was angry. I was pissed off at the world. I couldn't get high no more. What am I going to do to have fun? Life was just not going to be life anymore. You know, the only thing I knew for most of my life was getting high and partying, and that's what I did. You know, the best thing about me, the only thing I did good through my whole life up to that point was I have three bachelor's degrees. I have a bachelor's degree in computers, a bachelor's degree in electronics, and a bachelor's degree in business administration. So I got my education. So that's one thing I was proud of. I had that. I utilized that for a while. And I was sentenced to Kenmore Center August 6th, 2003. I had a great roommate at the time. Who actually was my roommate on the streets, which was really a God shot. And when I got there, I found out this person was going to be my roommate, and he used to drill me every night. And he would drill NA to me and drill NA to me and drill NA to me. My first meeting was in the Kenmore Center for a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I thought you all were a bunch of idiots. You know? Somebody out there was getting high. I know you guys were. You know. Come to find out that most of us, 99% of us, really aren't, and I have found a new way to live. I graduated from Kenmore Center, needless to say, around 6 months later, went into their outpatient program for the Do Them Prop 36, did the Prop 36 thing. One night I was at home right after I graduated, and I was watching a TV commercial on TV, and they had a Department of Homeland Security commercial come on TV that they were hiring. And I said, hey, what the hell? You know, I got a computer degree. You know, I'm a hacker. I can do that, you know. And a week later, I was employed by the United States government as an internet security specialist. Still on probation. Carrying a badge. Still on probation. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Scared me when I got the badge in the mail, too, because I thought they made a big mistake. You know, why would they? That's just not, you know. I even showed my probation officer, and she started laughing. But I did that for a year, and I really, you know, I tracked child molesters, and I tracked a lot of emails around the world, terrorist emails, things like that. I'm really proud that I got to do that. That's one of the best accomplishments I've done in my life was to do that. I'm very proud of that. Well, I won't go there about the child molester thing, but my life seems to, you know. When I was sentenced to Prop 36 the first time, they put me into a program out on Rosedale Highway called STEP. And, I didn't get along with the counselors. I would argue all the time. I was using the whole time anyway, so you know you can argue. I came up with the idea of the Constitution of the United States states that the preamble states life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. What is the definition of pursuit of happiness? Why can't I do drugs, right? And the counselors would say, oh, my God. How are we going to get through to this guy? I was in major denial. But during this time, I thought to myself, you know, God, I could do that. I could be a counselor. Shoot, I got 35 years of active addiction, so I could do that, you know. I know a lot about drugs. I know a lot about how I abuse them. So, you know, maybe maybe I could help some poor sucker down the road. Never thinking that would ever happen. You know, never thinking that. I was always geared towards the computers or electronics or something like that. But after I retired, actually I'm a retired federal officer from the government. I went to work for this little satellite communications company installing satellite software and dishes all around Bakersfield. And I walked in there one morning and they were all using methamphetamine around the table. And I just turned around and walked out. My girlfriend remembers when it all happened. I mean, I turned around and walked out. And just by chance, that weekend before was the NA convention in Ventura, and we were working operations. And the lady from that was the director at the time of Kenmer Center was there, and she came up to me in the convention and asked me, she goes, "When are you going to come to work for me?" And I just laughed because I thought she was kidding me. You know, I didn't think she really wanted me to work at Kenmer Center. Me working at Kenmer Center? God, never thought that would ever happen. But as soon as I saw these people using, you know, they call me back in the room and say, you know, "What's the matter? You want some of this?" And I'm like, "Guys, you don't want to see me on that stuff." And they're like, "Why?" You know, and I go, I'll steal your car, I'll steal your tools, I'll steal your wife. I said, you just don't want to see me go there. And they're looking at me like, you know, "You don't look like that bad of a guy." And I said, "Please, you just don't want to go there. I'm a totally different person when I'm on drugs." And so I went outside and picked up the phone and I called Linda at Kenmer Center and I said, "Is that job still available?" And she said, "You just come down and we'll get you in here." Needless to say, 30 days after that, I was employed at Kenmer Center as a counselor's aide, you know, and I was really proud of that. I mean, it's a great rehab. It's changed a lot over the years, but it's a really good place to get your tools for recovery. I know a lot of people some of the people in this room are graduates from Kenmer Center. And it's a privilege to work there. It's a real privilege. I did about, God, almost 2 years there as a counselor's aide. And one day, one of the supervising counselors came up to me. And they know that I enrolled in KDAC, and they know where I was gearing all my life towards. And they came up to me, and she asked me if I wanted a caseload. And I'm like, "Well, I can't have a caseload because I was actually a monitor supervisor. I was controlling the whole lobby and putting everybody in their beds and assigning beds and finding tasks because I was really, really busy. And I was also, during that job, I was known as a real asshole. My nickname was RoboCop, which, you know, it's a whole different thing than what I do now. But this supervising counselor came up to me and she asked me if I'd like a caseload. And I'm like, "Well, I really can't do that because I have so much to do now what I do in the lobby." She goes, "No." She goes, "Would you like to be a counselor and move upstairs and have your own office?" And I busted down and crying. I just started crying right there. It was like, you know, I couldn't believe she was asking me to do that. And needless to say, now I'm a counselor at Kenmer Center, and I have 18 great clients, and I'm counselor A for RMSD 1 contract for the state of California parole. And I'm still overwhelmed. When I say that, I get chills because, you know, I when I first got the NA, I didn't have a higher power. And my family was very religious growing up, but we had problems with the churches and, you know, the rulers getting smacked with rulers and stuff like that. So I never really, really liked organized religion at all. And when I got the NA, I started thinking about this higher power concept. And the day that I was restored to sanity on July 2nd, 2003, when I look back to that, everything before that day was hell. It was hell, hectic. Everything was chaos. You know, like I said, being beat up, shot, stabbed, hurting people, violence, straight violence. The day that I was restored to sanity, from that day on, everything got positive. Everything. There's been nothing happening negative in my life in over 3.5 years, you know. And I attribute that to my higher power. My higher power must want me where I'm at. And that's, I, you know, I that's the only thing I can put it off to, because I strive very hard to be a good counselor. My guys love me, and I try to be, I'm very empathetic. If you guys know what empathetic means, that means I've been in your shoes, and I know what to experience. I know how you feel, because I was right there in that center myself, and I know how that place can drive you crazy. And I'm very respectful, you know, and I'm authentic, and they like that. I'm very real. I don't sugarcoat nothing, you know. If you don't want to be here, there's the door. We don't keep you here. There's nothing keeping here. It's your choice. You know, and I'd say that in the meetings there. It's their choice. There's that fence around Kenmer Center is not to keep people in. It's to keep people out. If you don't want to be there, hit the frickin' gate. You know, sometimes they don't like that. But I don't, like I said, I keep straight up and I tell you exactly how it is. You know, I know that my life is 100% better. I never thought, you know, 3.5 years ago, you know, I prayed to my God that I was tired of being alone. I'd been alone for a long time, and I was just tired of being alone. And my girl Melissa came into my life, and that was a big thing. I mean, I prayed to my God, and He put Melissa in my life. A little over a year later, I have an 8-year-old boy in my life. A little over a couple years after that, I have a 13-year-old daughter in my life. So now I have a full family. And it's a privilege. It's a privilege to have them call me dad. I mean, that's something I never thought would ever happen in my life, ever. You know, my life is so much better than it used to be. And my job is very stressful. And that's because that I try not to get too close to my clients. I try not to get too close. But that big word try there is the big underlined word, because I can't help it. I look at them and I see myself, and I want them to get it, and I wish I could just smack them in their head and say, it's this easy, just do it. You know, that's all I did. I swear to God, all I did was I was pointing in the right direction, and I went to Narcotics Anonymous. I started going to meetings, 90 meetings in 90 days, and actually I did like, I don't know, almost, I think it was 289 meetings in 90 days, something like that. I was immersed in NA. You know, I got to meet Randy and Sissy. They're a big part of my recovery. I know they know that. I mean, we did some of the plays together, and he was my little son in a play, and it's really cool. We had a great time. We had a really good time, and they need to start that back up again. They need to start that PI phone line meeting days, and need to start doing the plays again, because that was a really enjoyable time in my life. You know, I don't get to be in service as much as I used to. I'm still on the phone lines, but. You know, I was in service. I was the secretary for Saturday night speaker meeting. I was the secretary at Wednesday night End of the Line. I've been a GSR, and I really enjoyed that. That's something that I recommend to anybody. If you're new into the program, and you know, you just start making coffee at a meeting. Anything you can do that, so you have that commitment to get to that meeting at least once a week. You know, and I recommend when you first come into these rooms, you try to hit a meeting every day. You know, I know it helped me a lot. And, you know, I got really lucky because of the fact that when I graduated from Kenmer Center, it was, the day of my first convention, NA convention. I graduated. I literally had my van full of all my stuff from Kenmer Center, and I went to the Holiday Inn Select, and I got to go to my first NA convention. And I met all these great people with a lot of clean time, and they just told me to sit down and shut the fuck up. And I did, you know. And from that day on, I still sat down and tried to shut the fuck up. 'Cause I'm known for saying my peace of mind, and I like to share. I mean, it's when I get up here, I try to let God speak through me, because, like I said, He's the one that directed me where I'm at now, and He's the one that's given me this clean time. Sure, I did all the footwork, and I haven't used at. Only mind controlling. I mean, I even quit smoking 2 years ago, and that was harder than giving up drugs. I mean, it was. It was literally harder than giving up drugs. That's because I worked at the center, and everybody smoked. So here I'm around all these smokers, and then going to NA meetings, and everybody smokes in NA meetings, and you know, it was really hard, but I did it. I did it with straight willpower, and also the nicotine patch, and that helped out a lot. But my life now is incredible. I'm a full-time student at CSUB. I have two classes left before I get my certification in alcohol and drug treatment. And then I get to go to my KDAC test, which was my first oral test. You're supposed to have 3,000 hours for a KDAC 1. I'm already around the 6,000 hour mark. So I can go from KDAC 1 to KDAC 2 as soon as I get the two orals done. And I'm striving to do that. I'm not going to overwhelm myself, though. That's one thing I was told in the beginning not to do, and I don't overwhelm myself. I mean, like I said a few minutes ago, that my job's really hard. There's a lot of paperwork to do on every client, and it's really hard to do that. And plus having the people I hate to say that word, relapse. I'm lucky. I've never relapsed, and the new buzzword in recovery is called recidivism. Recidivism, which is the buzzword for relapse, reoccurring. You know, and I know that it's a part of it's not a part of my recovery, but there are people that relapse, and we're addicts. And if by chance that's a part of recovery, use it positive. Don't make it into a negative. Use it as a part of your education and remember from it. Remember that. And the day that you get that urge again, play that tape to the end. And remember what happened to you. Remember those feelings that you had after it happened. And then pick up that phone and call somebody. And hopefully that won't happen to you ever again. You know, I'm lucky. I've never had the urge, the wants. My dad came and visited me inside Kinnamer Center. And you know how you beat yourself up in the beginning and try to figure out. I overanalyze a lot of stuff, so I overanalyze my situation, but I tried to figure out why I was an addict, why I was chosen to do this, why I was chosen to make myself into what I was at that time. And my dad came and visited me, and he let me know that my mom was an alcoholic, and my sister was a drug addict. And I never knew that for the whole time. And this is, I'm 48 now, so that was 44 years old. I never knew that for 44 years, and my mom was an alcoholic and my sister was a drug addict. And I was very rarely around the house for a long time, so I never knew really what took place. I knew that my mom hadn't drank for a long time. I remember that she used to drink, but I never didn't think she was an alcoholic. And my dad actually sat down and broke down and told me stories and about my sister and about my mom. And so, if you believe in the genetic thing, maybe I was born an addict. Maybe I had no choice. Now I do. Now I'm lucky. I get to do a 12-step every day. I get to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And I get to be right there in the middle of it, right in the trenches. That's what I call Kinnamer Center, is the trenches. We have a lot of people there now, over 160 clients, largest rehab in Bakersfield. I love it to death. It's a great job. I love working there. I love helping people. I must be doing something right, because I got a great recovery rate going. I've only had a couple of people that actually had that recidivism happen to them, and it was a big thing. I don't take it personally, because I didn't make that choice, and that's the way I have to think. It's not my choice. But it still hurts, because I know what they're going through too. I don't need them to go back to prison. I don't want them to go back to Laredo. That stuff doesn't help. It just promotes more criminal behavior, and the more criminal behavior you have, the more using you're going to do, and that's proven. That's a proven fact. Excuse you? That's my son up there farting, so it's okay. But my life now is completely different. I have serenity in my life. I have a beautiful woman. I have great kids, really smart kids, and that's a great thing. I never thought I'd be there ever. I have great friends in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm proud to say that I'm a counselor at Kinnamer Center. I'm proud to say that I'm an addict. I went to a meeting the other night, and they were all talking about how bummed out they were about being an addict. They thought it was the worst thing in the world, and I'm grateful. I'm really grateful that I'm an addict, because I wouldn't be where I'm at today. I wouldn't be the person that I am today. I wouldn't be a counselor. I wouldn't be in the position I am in trying to help people. And I enjoy what I do. I really do. I'm very much into the internet, and I try to get as much information that's completely up to date. Because I don't know about you guys, I remember when I was going to some of the outpatient clinics and stuff like that, they were playing stuff from the 50s, all these people that looked like they were, Dick Van Dyke Show, and, it was just old stuff. So I try to keep everything as up-to-date as possible, and I, it helps, it succeeds, and hopefully the clients realize that too. I look back on my time, and I just think that, wow, I remember doing the place with Randy, and I had less than a year. I think I had 6 months clean at that time, and And he just kept telling me, you know, he's the one that told me when I read that We Do Recover, and I ended it with basic text, page 84. That man right there is the one that told me that was the basic text. I had no idea where that came from. You know, I do now. You know, I read the basic text as much as possible. I read the basic text in my group. I teach the 12 steps in my group. I teach them right out of the NA Step Working Guide. Boy, wait till you get home. But my life now has totally changed. You know, and I'm very proud. I don't ever, hardly ever blow my own horn, but I'm very proud of myself. I succeeded in this far, and I'm clean today. And right now, I'm working on, I'm coming up 1,400 days clean, and that's going to be sometime next week. You know, I work just for today, but I'm at the point of my recovery where I can think a little bit ahead of time, and I still have to think ahead of time anyway, because all my weeks are planned with all the stuff I have to do for groups and keeping track of who's coming in and out and just, you know, life, day-to-day life. You know, I want to tell the newcomers, if you're a newcomer and you didn't get up here and recognize yourself as a newcomer, it's okay, because I didn't either when I first got here. I didn't get up and get a newcomer chip. After the first little smoke break, when everybody took off out of the room, I snuck over to the girl who was giving out chips, and I asked her for a newcomer chip. So, you know, today on Just for Today was about fear, you know, and I had that fear. I still experience the fear. And I still got this guy up on my shoulder talking to me every day. And it's the most inopportune moments. I'll be driving down the road, going to work, and all of a sudden this little guy talks to me saying, "Let's go get high. Nobody will know." You know? And I think to myself, "Oh my God, where'd that come from?" You know? It's not the thought that gets you, it's the action on that thought. You know? And I know how to handle those actions now. I laugh. I start laughing. You know, people might think I'm weird in the car next to me because I'm sitting there laughing at myself, but it's because I got the devil talking to me on one shoulder, you know, and the little angel on the other. You know, that little battle, stinking committee, whatever you want to call it. Just don't take an action on your thought. You know, I still have, like I say, I have those thoughts all the time. I just don't listen to them. I just put them out. Just don't listen to them. I know that now. I live just for today, and I do not see a relapse in my near future, at all. And luckily, I work in the field of recovery, and that keeps me grounded. Because back to that little shed that I built in the back of my yard, literally, that's all I did in there was that's not all I did in there, but I did drugs, I tore shit apart, put it back together, you know, the typical tweaker thing. And the day that I got sentenced in the Kinnamer Center, I have a little dry erase board in there, and it says, "Kinnamer Center, enough clothes for 7 days. Take your CD player and batteries. Call your dad." And that's still inside that little workshop. I had never erased it. I'm going to actually clear it over with clear spray paint, and I'm going to take it to work and put it on my office wall. It keeps me grounded. I don't want to ever forget that I'm an addict, because I know some counselors that do forget they're addicts, and they get all tied up in their own little self, and I never want to be that way. I want to be empathetic, and I want to be genuine, and I want to be authentic, and I want to be respectful. Because that's what the counselors that I had were to me, you know. I see counselors now that have went back out. My first counselor went back out, and I love her to death. I just recently saw her at the March meet, and all I could do is go and give her a big hug, tell her I loved her, tell her thanks, and let her go. You know, she knows where to go, she knows where to get it. And that's all I can do. I can't steer anybody. You know, I try to help as many people as I can. I mean, we have a new little friend we've taken under our wings, and she took her newcomer chip last night. 13 years old, guys. 13 years old. You guys know they have substance abuse counselors in middle school? There's 9-year-old kids. I mean, I did drugs. I mean, I smoked pot at 9 years old. But we got kids doing methamphetamine at 9 now, and all kinds of stuff, PCP. And that's horrible. That's just horrible. That's why I'm actually gearing my recovery, or my recovery and my education, towards the juvenile end of it, because I'd like to catch them before they did what I did. Because, like I said, I did some horrible things, you know. And luckily, I got to make amends to most of those people. Some of them I can't. Some of them would, you know, I might not come out of that alive. I laugh about that, but it's serious, you know. I'm very serious about my recovery. I have a lot of fun in recovery. You know, the camp out's coming up. I got to go on an NA cruise. That was a blast. I had so much fun. 500 clean people on a board ship with 2,500 drunks. God, you had to be there. You know, we had so much fun, though. So much fun. Met so many people from all over the world, too. That's a, you know, big experience, too. If you ever been to conventions, you know, the next convention, you guys should really consider on going. Our conventions are a blast, too. I've been of service the last 3 years. Operations 2 years in a row, and then the hospitality last year. And I got to go up on stage this year and hug newcomers. And I'll tell you what, that was the bombest experience I've ever had in my life. I can't even explain the feeling that I had. I think he was 11 years old, and he had been clean for 2 days. You know? And I just looked at him like, I go, how old are you? And he goes, 11. And I'm like, oh my God, I just started crying. Just started crying like a baby. You know? I can do that now. You know? Couldn't do that before. I'm a man. Men don't cry. Bullshit. Men cry. I'll tell you right now, they cry. It's good for you. It cleanses the soul. And it was an honor to be up there on stage, and it was an honor giving those books out and giving those hugs and giving those blank pillowcases out with everybody. Everybody gets to sign a pillowcase and put a little, you know, a little saying on their form, keep it simple, just for today. You know, it was an honor to do that. And I've been looking forward to do that the last 2 years in a row. I couldn't do it because I was always the one that was doing something else at the time. I had volunteered to stay at the hotel in Ventura to be the liaison between the hotel and operations while everybody else took off to go to the main speaker meeting down the road. I remember where it was at, but down the road. And so I had to stay at the hotel while that was going on. And I got a speaker tape, but you know, I really wanted to be up on stage and do that. I wanted that experience because I needed that. I need that spirituality. That's something I really strive for every day now, is get some kind of spirituality. I tell my guys, I got a lot of guys that work, and they do the 7-day, 12-hour day stuff, you know. And I keep telling them, you need one day, just no matter what, you got to go to a meeting one day. Get that spirituality into your recovery, because if not, I've seen it happen many a times, and I don't want that to happen to anybody. I don't wish that on anybody, you know. I know myself, you know, I watch TV a lot, you know, on the weekends, and I see those beer commercials, and I was never much of a drinker that much, but I remember, I mean, I see those beer commercials, and I said, God, you know, my little addict mind starts talking, damn, that looks good. But I know what would happen. I drink a beer, I smoke a joint, I do a line, I break out in handcuffs. And that's the way my progression goes. It goes every time. And I'm lucky now. I get to go out to Lairdo, and I get to leave Lairdo. I go out and share at the NA with Bill. I can't remember his last name. Bill, the pimpy Bill. That's what I call him. Dressed like a pimp. I love him to death. He does a great thing out there. You know, I get to go with Jim Big Jim T, the comedian. You guys all know him about the vacuum cleaner. But I get to go out there and I get to share, and that's a big thing too, because you know, 7 years ago I was right in that room too. 7 years ago, you know. But my life's like totally changed now. I don't introduce myself as an addict in recovery because I'll always be an addict. You know, I'm David and I'm an addict. I'm just an addict, and I keep myself grounded. I need everybody to know. I mean, you need to get, if you don't have one, you need to get a basic text. You need to read the first 103 pages of that basic text and find yourself. If you don't, read it again. You will find yourself sooner or later. Get a sponsor. You know, be proud of those key tags you get. Fly them like a flag. You know, be proud. We're the ones that are going to change the world. We need to change that stigmatism on how addicts are, because we're an addict for the rest of our life, but we can change ourselves and we can become a productive member of society. And I'm proof positive of that. And I'm proud of that. You know? I'll end with something a real good, big person in my recovery, Walter, used to say, and he taught me. I don't know, how did he put it? He says, oh my God, I can't. When every time I want to say it, I can't say it. You know? And that's, I don't know why God wants to do that to me, but he's making me draw a blank. But yeah, I love everybody. You know, if you ever need anything and you see me, come on, give me a hug. I'm very approachable. Yeah, that's it. I may not be what I want to be. I may not be what I could be. But thank God I'm not what I used to be. My name is David. I'm an ass.
All right, let's thank Dave one more time. Let's put that a few minutes, and I got a burning desire. Can't be treated at a free clinic. My name's Randy. I'm an addict.
Hi, Randy.
You know, this morning, yesterday I was talking about fear, and it really hit home for me because for a long time I've been running in fear. You know, the fear of the unknown. Fear of the things that I don't want to face. You know, and I've been acting out a lot in the last week or two. And it's based on fear. You know, I got a chance to talk to my sponsor about it today, you know, and one of my biggest fears, and I don't know if it's fear-based, but it's because I've been around here a long time, and for 8 years now, this time of year, at the countdowns, me and my wife get to stand up together. This year, I have the honor to watch her stand up, and I get to sit down. She's taken 8 years in a couple days. And I'm grateful, man. You know what I mean? And at the same time, I'm sad. Because I told her I would never give her that one fucking day. Because I used to have one more day clean than she did. You know, and it was hard for me, man, because I left her in this house with no power, no water. The PG&E fucking cops was patrolling the house every fucking night. And I knew I had to make a change or nothing was going to change. And I had to pray that she was going to follow me. So I drove away and I went to that recovery home. And she did follow me. You know what I mean? She's my dog. And when I got loaded, you know what I mean, it was my turn to follow. And it's hard. It's fucking hard. When you're used to being the leader, you know, and I'm grateful that the God of my understanding seemed fit for me to find my way back before all was lost. Because, man, I was running on fucking borrowed time for a long time. I mean, I was taking chips that weren't mine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when David was sharing, man, we had some good times when I was here, you know what I mean? I was on the PI committee, and man, we fucking was rocking. We were doing shit. And you know, I lost track of where my serenity was. And where my serenity was based in service. I had more serenity when I was making less money, being of service to Narcotics Anonymous, going to meetings on a regular basis, and doing the things that kept me clean. Somewhere down the line, I lost track of that. I thought that I needed more money. And you know what more money got me? Fucking loaded. That's what more money got me. Got me disconnected. You know, and today I'm plugged in. But I'm going through this time. It's kind of like when somebody, I don't know if you've ever been close to somebody in recovery and they died, they just couldn't fucking get it, and they'd go in and out, and finally, they fucking, you're standing at their gravesite, you know. It's kind of like I'm laying that old dead horse down. I mean, this year means more to me because it's been a struggle. Dude, when I first got clean, it wasn't a struggle for me. It was fucking, woohoo, fuck, man. I was fucking happy. Things was rolling. I mean, fuck, it was on and cracking. This year's been a struggle. And it's because of my own fucking denial and my own selfishness not being able to work on Randy. Because since I drove up here, man, I've been a fucking step-working, N.A. Bible-thumping, fucking pew-jumping, motherfucking recovery-type dude. You know what I mean? I'm serious. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what it was all about. And I lost track of that. Last night, I sat down and I actually worked on Randy. And I fucking went back to the basics. And I wrote a goodbye letter to my dis-ease. Not the disease, the dis-ease. Because I don't know about you, but when I get loaded, I have a dis-ease in me. And my dis-ease keeps me lying and cheating and stealing and doing all the sneaky shit that comes along with that. You know what I mean? And when I wrote that letter, it put me in a whole different state of meditation. So fucking deep Then I went, because I got on this diet too, right? I'm tired of being fucking fat. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to rewrite the basic text, and the first fucking couple pages is going to say, make sure your first higher power is not the refrigerator fucking door. Either that or sign up for Jenny Craig weight program right a fucking way, because you're going to fucking need it. You know what I mean? If you're like me, I'll be stuffing feelings. I eat every fucking thing. You know what I mean? So I've gained this whole person, extra person. And my fucker's heavy, dude. My back's killing me from carrying this motherfucker, you know? So I made a constant decision to go to get on this diet program. So after I did that riding, I'm thinking, well, you know what? I can only fucking eat something that fucking walks, flies, swims, you know, or eggs and cheese. That's it. So I'm thinking, well, I'm going to hard boil me some eggs, right? I'm all fucking, woo, I'm all fucking happy. I'm in the house by myself. I'm all fucking serenity bound. I put the fucking shit on the stove. I went to the bed, and I'm thinking, yep, 15 minutes, this shit'll be done. Yep, I don't know how much longer, but my old lady comes through the door. Motherfucker, you damn near burnt the fucking house down. To say the least, I fell asleep, and the fucking eggs was overcooked. There's fucking smoke in the house. Of course, there was no smoke detectors, which I was responsible for putting in the house. They're there now. But only thing I could say when she woke me up after, you know, I'm all like, well, fuck, we're not on fire. I'm like, damn, babe, I feel so fucking good. She gave me this crazy-ass look, and I did. Even though I damn near burnt the house down, I felt fucking great because I got rid of some shit. There's some shit that happens when the fucking pen hits the paper. You know what I mean? If you're here tonight and you're not fucking writing shit on the paper, there's something that happens when it goes from your mind to your heart and out the end of that fucking pen. There's a magic that happens. And I felt that magic last night. And I realized what I've been missing out on for years now. I've been missing out on working on fucking Randy. And I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to work on Randy. My name's Randy. I'm an addict. Thanks. All right, does anybody else have a burning desire that don't need to be treated at the free clinic? No? John, quit pacing. All right, can we get a treasurer's report? Yeah.